The Phoenix VA got a new leader last month, and the federal VA got a new leader last week. This week, they met. Next up, the American Legion is coming to town to help veterans.
So our line of thinking was, if the VA isn't going to provide those services to veterans timely and adequately, then we're going to bring those services to veterans.
I'm Mark Brody.
And I'm Steve Goldstein. Today on the show, the latest on the VA. Also, what does an Arizona accent sound like?
Mesa gets some federal money to scout out land for the light rail.
And rail riders downtown this weekend may happen upon a performance.
We're really excited about taking theater out of a theater building. And so I think that's going to be something that's part of our company forever.
Plus, Phoenix Comic-Con, and Steve learns how to use an ancient weapon. Look out!
That and more on the show after a check of this hour's news. Dramatic developments related to the VA in Phoenix continued this week, including a visit from the new Interim Secretary of Veterans Affairs, who struck an urgent tone while praising many who serve in VA healthcare.
I still believe that that represents the vast majority of the people at VA, people that care deeply about serving veterans. And where we've got folks that don't align with that set of values, we'll take the action that we need to take.
KJZZ's Carrie Young has been covering the VA and joins me now. Carrie, what was the message Interim Secretary Sloan Gibson brought with him to Phoenix?
Gibson brought with him a sense of urgency yesterday, and he listed a few things that he was going to do, steps that he was going to take to really start to institute reform in the administration. One of the things that he pointed out was that he was going to try and increase transparency across the VA. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that was going to happen was on Monday, we can expect to see wait time data for facilities across the country. And we can also expect to see an audit that covered several hundred facilities across the country as well. He has plans to visit locations every 30 days, he said, so that he can talk to the medical directors there. And really, that almost institutes sort of a sense of ownership for those medical directors so that they really take it seriously what their duties are, that they have to answer to someone. And then also he said that he was really going to try to get more resources within the system. And one of the ways that he was going to do that was to bring in HR specialists to help speed along the hiring process, because he said that his first priority was to get veterans off of waiting lists. And that all sort of falls into the fact that his main priority after that was to regain veterans' trust.
Veterans must feel safe when they come to VA for care. And earn it, we will. I don't expect them to give it back to us. I expect us to have to earn it one veteran at a time.
You didn't interview Eric Shinseki, but we all know about some of the criticism of the way he handled things recently. You talked with Dr. Foote, the original whistleblower, on multiple occasions. Was there anything different that stood out about the way Sloan Gibson expressed himself? Not even necessarily the words, but the way he expressed himself.
He did seem somewhat emotional, not in the sense that he was on the verge of tears, but he, you know, hit the podium a few times when he spoke, and he definitely seemed very determined that things were going to turn around. So it was only reporters in that press conference, for the most part. Very direct questions were asked, and they were answered directly as well.
Bipartisan legislation has been, at least in some ways, proceeding through the Senate related to improving health care for veterans. And there was the goal of getting it done by the anniversary of D-Day, which is today. What can you tell us about what that legislation ideally would do?
Senators John McCain and Bernie Sanders did reach this bipartisan agreement yesterday. And so that means that bill will now go in front of the Senate, and that vote could happen as soon as next week. But this bill could, it expands health care availability to veterans, basically. And that happens in a couple of ways. One, it would allow veterans who have experienced an excessive wait time for an appointment, or those veterans who live in rural areas, they could go and seek out outside care from that VA system. And then it would also make it easier for the administration to hire and fire VA officials. So, I mean, when it comes to hiring, especially, too, there is an issue with staffing. And word is it takes about 3 months to fill a position right now.
KJZZ reporter Carrie Young.
The American Legion is coming to Phoenix. Officials will hold a town hall meeting on Monday, meet with local VA leaders on Tuesday morning, and then open the doors to a crisis center at noon that day at Post 1 in Phoenix. Verna Jones, Director of Veteran Affairs and Rehabilitation, says it'll be open until Friday and will offer a wide range of services.
When a veteran comes in, they'll be able to come in and talk to somebody. They'll triage them, see what their needs are, you know, prioritize those needs for them, and then send them to the on-site appropriate avenues for them.
Now, theoretically, these are the kinds of services that vets would get at the VA, right?
Yes, these are things that are normally done inside the VA. So our line of thinking was if the VA isn't going to provide those services to veterans timely and adequately, then we're going to bring those services to veterans.
So given the fact that this scandal has been going on for a while and some folks have known about it for even longer than that, why do this now?
Well, you know, it's not like the American Legion just started advocating for quality health care and timeliness. But when we found out that it was even worse than we thought, of course we didn't know there was a secret waiting list. As the problem escalates, it's definitely time for the American Legion to escalate our advocacy and to heighten what it is that we're doing for veterans.
Without getting too much into VA procedure and logistics and everything, if a veteran comes to your crisis center and says, I need an appointment, how will your workers be able to get that veteran an appointment with a doctor where they weren't able to get that appointment with a doctor just going through the VA?
Right. So what we've asked for is an intake specialist, someone who can come there and take the information and schedule an appointment for that veteran right away. If, in fact, they're not able to do on-site scheduling, we're going to provide some oversight for those veterans who've come through us. We've got a sheet that tells us what services they're seeking, and every veteran who comes to us and they mark down that they ask for an appointment, we're going to contact that veteran back to see if they've gotten an appointment. And if those appointments aren't coming out timely, then the American Legion will have to move to the next step.
What would the next step be?
We'll go back to the VA. We'll go to Congress. We'll go to the White House. We'll go wherever we need to go to make sure that what's happening now doesn't continue to happen and it doesn't happen again.
What are you hoping to hear from the administration at the Phoenix VA?
We want their total commitment. We want their complete buy-in, that they are willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that veterans are seen timely, make sure that they move forward. We can't right the wrongs, but what we want to hear is the VA say that they're totally committed to being transparent, being totally upfront with us, upfront with the veterans, and being totally committed to making sure veterans are served the way they're supposed to be.
Have you done this in other cities before, set up a crisis center like this?
This is our first crisis center. We've gone out and done several town hall meetings, but this is our very first crisis center, and this crisis center in Phoenix will be the template for more of those crisis centers to come, because as more and more allegations and more unethical scheduling procedures are being exposed, the need for a center like this is going to grow, and we're ready for that.
Verna Jones is the Director of Veteran Affairs and Rehabilitation with the American Legion in Washington, D.C. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has given Mesa $400,000 in grants. The city will use that money to do environmental assessments on land it may buy along a proposed 1.9-mile light rail extension on Main Street from Mesa Drive to Gilbert Road. Scott Boucher is the city's Deputy Director of Environmental and Sustainability.
The land will be used as part of the light rail. Some of it will be full takes for either power stations for the light rail, possibly park and ride facilities, and also some of it is just what would be strips that we would take, usually frontage, for right-of-way associated with the light rail.
And what's on that land now?
That land now is different businesses that are along Main Street. Some of them are shopping centers, some of them are old auto dealerships and or auto repair facilities.
Are there any businesses or sites along that stretch that strike you as having more potential for serious environmental contamination or even less serious environmental contamination?
I think if you look at the history of Main Street, which used to be the US 60, now known as the Superstition Freeway, it was very auto-centric when it was created. So there's a lot of properties that were related to the automobile that dealt with fuels and or oils or other materials that are just known with automobiles that are also known to have caused contamination in the past.
Would that factor into a decision about which property you might want to buy, the cost and the difficulty of potentially cleaning that up?
Anytime we're taking a look at a property, depending on what we find during these site assessments, it may have some effect on what we purchase or where we locate things.
I would imagine that you've done a similar process for the extension that's being built right now through downtown Mesa. So what kinds of things did you find during that process?
Well, this would actually be our third segment, because the original one that's operating now that goes to Sycamore Station, and then the one that's under construction now, we have found things. That the main thing that we have found is underground storage tanks, whether those were for gasoline or used oil is another big one that we find. And sometimes you find those during the environmental site assessment process. But other times we actually find them during construction when you actually start digging up.
So once the process gets started, once the money becomes available and you start doing your work, if people are driving along Main Street, will they see something? Like what will it look like to people when you guys are doing your thing?
A lot of the work that we do isn't very glamorous with this grant. A lot of it is records reviews. They do come out and do site work where they'll be taking pictures and looking for obvious signs. Through those records reviews, site visits, you've identified potential issues at a property and you actually start taking samples. The biggest thing that we might have out here is a drill rig that's on a site for a couple of days to take some soil samples.
Once your process on this stretch is finished, does that theoretically help potential developers knowing the information, knowing what you found, especially if you did some work on a piece of land that the city didn't end up buying?
Yeah, that's the whole idea of the Brownfields program, is to remove that uncertainty with what might exist on a property from an environmental standpoint and let a developer know with pretty good certainty that these are the issues that I'm either going to have to deal with or that I won't have to deal with as I redevelop this site.
Scott Boucher is Mesa's Deputy Director of Environmental and Sustainability. If you happen to ride the light rail in downtown Phoenix tonight or either of the two following nights, you may inadvertently end up taking in a performance. Rising Youth Theater is putting on a show called View from the Tracks, which is a series of 8 plays, 5 minutes each, performed by an adult and an actor between the ages of 11 and 18. Exanthea Walker and Sarah Sullivan are the theater company's co-founders.
It is essentially a public art experience, so you can be very intentional about experiencing that public art and you can reserve your ticket. You can also be on the train and heading home or heading out to First Friday and suddenly find yourself next to a play.
What are these plays about?
Well, they're about traveling in Phoenix. They're about the light rail. Some of them are really specifically about a person that the artists observed on the light rail, or about the idea of moving on a train, or moving on a train specifically in Phoenix.
It's very meta.
It's true. It is very meta. But that's really what we are about as a theater company. We create plays that are embedded in and reflective of our community. So our partner for this project was the Valley Metro, was the light rail system.
What kind of reaction did you get? I mean, you had to do some rehearsals, I would imagine, before you go live with this thing on the trains. I mean, what did other riders think or have to say about what you guys were doing?
There's been a great story from every rehearsal. because some people love it and some people are super freaked out by it. So one of the pieces is about a woman who time travels. And she steps onto a train, and she thinks she's in the 1890s, and then she discovers that she's on the light rail. And this one woman, who was an accidental audience member, was so concerned about her well-being. Like, she was like, do you need some water? Don't sit on the floor. Your dress is so beautiful. What are you? You're going to ruin your dress. And then eventually she understood that it was a play, and she was like, oh.
This is not invisible theater, so we're not trying to create a piece that people don't know whether or not it is a play. We want people to know. So building in the traditional theater structures in a very non-traditional theater space.
Obviously, performing on public transit, trains, buses, whatever, is not a new concept. But I'm curious, it is seemingly a new concept here, especially because light rail is still relatively new. So how did this idea come up? Like, where did you guys get the idea to, hey, we should perform plays on light rail trains and at the stations?
It happened in two parts. well, several parts, actually. The first part is that we used this model of one adult artist and one youth artist last year in a performance, and it was a really, we thought, effective, interesting way to create work, and we wanted to do that again. And then we happened to be in a meeting with Mayor Stanton at the end of last year, and at the end of the meeting, we were just talking about our work, and he said, you know, you guys should really think about doing plays on the light rail. And we said, well, that's actually a great idea.
How do you prepare, especially some of the actors who are kids, how do you prepare them for performing in front of an audience who might not, A, know that they're being performed in front of, or might not want to see a performance at that time?
That's been a really interesting journey for us, actually, figuring out how to live in the moment of the theater and to understand that the theater is going to change. It's not a question of whether or not it's going to change every performance. It's that it's going to, and you have to be open and ready to adapt and adjust and move either literally where you're spacing something on the train or pause for a minute because someone needs to pass you or pause for a minute because the security guard is going to check your light rail pass.
So if this goes well, can you imagine doing either this again or something similar like this again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're really excited about taking theater out of a theater building. And so I think that's going to be something that's part of our company forever.
Xanthia Walker, who along with Sarah Sullivan is the co-founder of Rising Youth Theater.
Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody. Coming up, we'll take a look at increased female presence and participation at the Phoenix Comic-Con. It's $5 Friday on KJZZ. It's a one-day effort with the purpose of recruiting you to become a $5 a month contributor to the station that brings you credible news coverage every day of the week. Over the course of a year, your gift will provide KJZZ with a dependable source of income. You can make an impactful $5 a month sustaining donation online at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
Listeners provide KJZZ with the largest portion of funding. If you've never given before or just can't remember the last time you gave, you can consider becoming a $5 a month member right now at kjzz.org. You can also give on the KJZZ mobile app or call 888-774-9150.
And it's an exciting hour for another reason, because $900 available from the Member Matching Fund to double contributions up until 3 o'clock. Still room for you at that $5 a month level, or if you could afford $10 a month to support local news, local reporting, and local programs like the show. The number is 888-774-9150.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that there's really nothing quite like the show on the radio anywhere in this city. You're not going to get the kind of in-depth community news, stuff going on very close to your particular neighborhood, not just in Phoenix, not just in Arizona, but in your neighborhood here in the Valley. Please put a dollar value on that listening. Maybe it's $5 a month. Maybe it's $10 a month. You pick the amount. The important thing is when you become a sustaining member, you give a reliable source of funding to KJZZ, and you know that you have done your part every single month. You can make your gift right now. Have it doubled at kjzz.org or call 888-774-9150.
The voices from across the city and the news you rely on all day on KJZZ. That includes regular pieces like Mark with the Hot Corner here on the show. We also have Did You Know, which is coming up a little bit later on. These are news and information reports that have to do with your community, not just the broader state and major issues that you might see in the newspaper. We really get down. We visit different neighborhoods, different corners, different communities, and we know that's why you listen to public radio, because it's a real community resource. Now's the time to support it. 888-774-9150.
Thank you to Julie in Phoenix. Says she gets her main news every day from KJZZ, became a new sustaining member. Elaine in Phoenix made a sustaining gift by calling 888-774-9150. Says KJZZ is the only intelligent radio. She must have said that before you and I came on. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150. Your gift will be doubled up until 3 o'clock.
This is $5 Friday. It is a one-day fund drive. We're looking for you to become a sustaining member at just $5 a month. Think of all the things you spend $5 on. Maybe it's a cup of coffee. Maybe it's a lottery ticket. Maybe you're dry cleaning a shirt or two. Think of the value you get from public radio, this community resource, every day. Become a sustaining member right now. Just $5 a month, 888-774-9150.
And that's how public radio works. When you do your individual part, your fellow listeners do their individual part, and together you get the kind of news and information you rely on every day. And oh, by the way, for the next 34 minutes, your gift will be doubled, $900 available from the Member Matching Fund to double gifts before 3 o'clock. Plenty of room for you yet. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Again, online, KJZZ.org. Also, $900 available from the Member Matching Fund to double gifts until 3 o'clock. The number is 888-774-9150.
KJZZ is supported by El Charro, Paradise Valley's oasis from the summer heat, offering refreshing summer cocktails and seasonal cuisine created from organic, locally grown ingredients. Menus and more at elchorro.com.
Phoenix Comic-Con is underway downtown, and the event has long been a haven for those who immerse themselves in what is affectionately known as geek culture. Cons, as they're called, are meant to be inclusive spaces where everyone, no matter what their interests, can be a part of a community. But some women have talked and written about ways in which they're not treated respectfully, specifically by men, and especially when they're dressed in costumes, something known as cosplay. Libby Johnson attends Comic-Con and has been a comic book fan for about 20 years.
When I go, do I notice, like, the feminist textbook male gaze going on sometimes? Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, I even notice that when someone's in full cosplay, I tend to stare at them, too.
She says it's hard not to look at how elaborate the costumes can be. Some of the difficulty women face at Comic-Con has to do with men not giving women their due as real fans and assuming they don't know as much about the characters as all the men do. But Libby says she's never had any problems.
Every Comic-Con I've been to, I've been treated like a comic fan, not like a female comic fan. I've had a really egalitarian experience at all the comic book conventions that I've been to.
Still, some more serious problems arise occasionally. Stacy Gordon has been a vendor at Phoenix Comic-Con for 7 years selling puppets, and she'd never had a problem until this week.
Actually, just yesterday, I wasn't even in costume. You know, they have this saying called cosplay does not equal consent, and you know, non-cosplay also does not equal consent, and I had somebody come up to my booth and actually kiss me without me wanting them to.
What did you do?
I turned away so that he couldn't get my face, and then I asked them to have a great day. Then I talked to con staff, and they were really, really great about it.
Gordon says she's seen stuff like that happen to other women, especially at night, when convention goers have had a bit to drink. She says she prepares for Comic-Con the way she does to hang out with her friends. She lets other people's behaviors dictate what she wears.
So when I do cosplay, I do things that are more modest, that don't draw as much attention. But, you know, normally I think it's just being aware and being assertive. And it's really no different than being a woman in the rest of the world.
Both Gordon and Libby Johnson say there are far more women at Comic-Con now than there were in the past, which they both say is a good thing. Megan Calcote, who's been going to Phoenix Comic-Con for about 4 years, says her experiences have been overwhelmingly positive.
I've never been put through the fake geek girl quiz, but I have heard stories from people who have experienced that. It definitely happens. I do think it's the minority.
And for Libby Johnson, who says she was once the only girl she ever saw at Atomic Comics in Mesa, it was another little girl who inspired her to take the next Comic-Con step to cosplay.
I was actually at Comic-Con last year and, you know, walking around visiting the different booths, and I saw probably a 5 or 6-year-old little girl who was dressed in cosplay as my favorite character, Ms. Marvel. Definitely a very pro-girl, feminist sort of character. But I looked at this little girl dressed up as my favorite character, and I thought to myself, like, I can do that. I'm totally going to do that next year.
Sadly for her, she says adult responsibilities got in the way of those plans, but she promises she'll be in full dress next year.
It's the show on KJZZ, and these are the sounds of the city.
I'm Nancy Hill, and I'm letterpress printing. You have type that is three-dimensional and gets pressed into paper. when I do a class, we can ink up rollers and everything and do it, but then I make them clean it up, and that's never fun. So they just use a brayer and, you know, and brayer on ink. Put the piece of paper down, roll it over. It's a pretty simple mechanical process. The printing part is not that hard, but getting ready to print, that's what takes a long time. I like the tactileness of it, and I like the fact that I made it and that it didn't come out of the computer.
Nancy Hill, Letterpress Printing at Hazel and Violet in downtown Phoenix. If you have suggestions for a future Sounds of the City, you can either email us, theshow@kjzz.org, or just use a letterpress printer.
Good afternoon. This is the show on KJZZ. Today is also a special event. In addition to this being the show, it's KJZZ's one-day $5 Friday. It's the perfect time to make your first ever contribution to the station that brings you the accurate news coverage that's so important to both you and to this community. Please invest a minute or two right now to help provide KJZZ with a far-reaching gift of just $5 a month at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150. Not sure the engraving invitation does much here. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Brody along with Steve Goldstein.
And if you've ever considered making a monthly sustaining gift to KJZZ, today is the right time to make that cost-effective commitment of $5 a month. It's easy to contribute either online at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
And if you do that, if you make your gift at either of those places, your gift will be doubled. $900 available from the member matching fund to double your contribution before 3 o'clock. So about 27 or so minutes left to go. Your $5 a month contribution is so huge to the station. It keeps reporters in the field. It keeps the show on the air. It keeps the lights on in this building and our microphones working and batteries in our recorders. You literally pay for just about everything you hear on the station. It's thanks to you. So please make your gift $5 or $10 a month. You pick the amount. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Your $5 a month sustainable gift or a $10 a month sustainable gift or $20 a month makes it possible for us to have some set amount of money we know is coming in as the foundation of public radio in this community. You'll be doing your part to do all those things Mark mentioned, to make it possible for us to bring you all the programs you count on. The local and national reporting and analysis that you've said in the past is vitally important to you. Support this community resource right now that brings you voices of the community, different sounds of the community that you won't get anyplace else. It's really easy. Just take 1 minute and go to kjzz.org.
There's so many great benefits to becoming a sustaining member. You're automatically entered into all the contests we do during future fund drives. You know that you are doing your part every single month. You don't have to worry about it. It's one more thing you can check off your list. It's kind of like, think about it like, you know, if you have Netflix or Hulu Plus or something, you pay a certain amount of money. I think it's like $7 or $8 a month or something for Netflix and some of the others. It's basically the same thing. You know that every time you need it, the service is there for you. Same kind of thing with public radio. You make your $5 or $10 a month contribution. You know every time you turn on the radio that you have done your individual part. That's exactly how public radio works. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
You may have thought you couldn't afford to become a member of public radio. You can. At just $5 a month, this sustainable membership means so much to public radio. And you probably won't miss $5 a month, and at the same time, you'll know you're doing your part. If you could afford a little bit more, that's terrific as well, but you decide what works for you. How do you use this radio station? What kind of resource is it for you? Do you listen 5 days a week to Morning Edition and All Things Considered? You look forward to the show on Fridays? Maybe even listen on the weekends as well. If you're that kind of person, public radio is important. So support this community resource right now. It's possible with your help to keep this going strong and also to keep these drives really short. Can't get much shorter than one day. 888-774-9150.
Yeah, this is both the first and last day of the fun drive. This drive ends tonight at 6 o'clock. You know, if you've been giving periodically over the course of the years, maybe a little bit here, a little bit here, maybe a couple years later, it's so easy to set up a simple way to do a monthly contribution. Make your life easy. It helps your radio station as well. KJZZ.org. If you're on the mobile app, you can give that way. Or call 888-774-9150. And thanks.
When you're having a conversation or even listening to someone on the radio, have you ever judged that person by his or her voice?
Do you know where I get the smoothie around here? I'm sorry, I'm sorry,
I didn't hear what you said.
I said I don't know where you'd get a smoothie around here at all. I'm so sorry.
Oh, okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries.
Studies suggest that 2/3 of young women use something called vocal fry. Matthew Pryor, assistant professor of applied linguistics at ASU, explains the term.
First, we have to recognize that in speech, there are three main registers. The loft register, which is the higher voice, what we might call falsetto. There's the modal register, which is chest voice. So this is the usual way that we speak, so we call it the modal register. There's also the pulse register, which is the lowest register, and this is where we get what people call the glottal fry. So when using the pulse register, our voice tends to turn creaky. It's due to these glottal low-frequency pulses produced by our larynx, or our voice box.
When I first heard vocal fry, it sounds negative to me, because it sounds like you're trying to fry your vocal cords, in essence. Is that a wrong way of reading it?
I think on the one hand, you can think of vocal fry and say, oh, they're frying their vocal cords. I think where the name comes from is because the vocal folds are hitting together, okay, and it is constricted, and it makes these kind of pulsating sounds.
So it's more innocent than what I'm thinking of.
I think we have to keep in mind that there's vocal fry that's used, for example, by young people, particularly young women right now, and there's vocal fry which is due to some sort of underlying physiological problem.
Is vocal fry something new and something we'd associate with the U.S.?
It's tempting to think of vocal fry as a relatively new phenomenon, as a kind of Britney Spears effect or a nefarious plot by the Kardashian sisters. But vocal fry has been with us for quite some time, and if we look back, menacing characters have always been represented by the use of vocal fry. For example, Vincent Price, the old-time horror actor, The Wizard of Oz, Margaret Hamilton as the Wicked Witch, she also used vocal fry. We also might point out that powerful characters that have been played by women in films use vocal fry to demonstrate a kind of strength and authority. We think, for example, of Mae West, Betty Davis, even Eartha Kitt in the Batman TV series is probably a well-known example.
Are there certain obstacles or certain biases against people who tend to use vocal fry more frequently?
This isn't just an issue of vocal fry. Mm-hmm. This is an issue of people who speak language which seems to be marked in some way. Well-known scholars in linguistics and sociolinguistics, they've pointed out that linguicism, so linguistic discrimination, discriminating against people for the language variety they use, the language resources they use, tends to be the last acceptable form of discrimination. So a lot of job interview experts are now suggesting that vocal fry can negatively impact hiring decisions. People, as a rule, not just about vocal fry, but they tend to prefer voices that are representative of the overall population, voices that lie within that middle range.
ASU Assistant Professor of Applied Linguistics, Matthew Pryor.
Good. There are a lot of factors that account for how we sound, where we grew up, for example. I'm from Central Connecticut, which is basically right between the New York City accent, in which I'm known as Mawk, and the wicked Hadkaw accent in Boston. But what about Arizona? Is there an accent associated with the state? ASU Linguistics Professor Karen Adams says actually there are many.
It depends where people grew up, what their family background is, what their particular occupation might be, or their socioeconomic status. It's not just the way people pronounce words, but it's also the lexical items they use. It's also the ways in which they structure their conversation and their beliefs about how to be polite to other people. And there are lots of distinctive terms in Arizona that have to do with plant names and other kinds of things.
Are these different accents recognizable to people either within Arizona or not in Arizona who are not linguists?
They probably are not very noticeable. If we're talking about English, some of them are not very noticeable to other English speakers, let's say in Utah or New Mexico or California, because many of the differences that you get in Arizona as far as pronunciation goes are ones that they have similar usages in those particular parts of the Southwest.
Let's listen to some folks in our newsroom who are from Arizona.
Okay.
And I'm telling you they're from Arizona, so maybe we can determine some of what makes their accent sound like a quintessential Arizonan, if such a thing exists.
Peel, fail, fell, fool, full, merry, Mary. Caught, caught. Since, sense. Dawn, dawn.
Pill, peel. Fail, fell. Fool, full. Mary, Mary. Caught, caught. Since, sense. Dawn, dawn.
Those are some of the folks from around KJZZ using words from a diagnostic tool, Karen, that you had sent over to us. And I am not a trained linguist, but it seemed to me these are all people from different parts of Arizona. A lot of the words to my ears that they said sounded almost identical.
Yes, and they were. In this part of the West, those vowels, which are referred to vowels that are they're called low back vowels. All that means is when you pronounce them, your tongue moves down and back in your mouth. And those are merged in this area. So it's not surprising that they were merged by those speakers.
So let's listen now to some folks who are not from Arizona doing the same diagnostic tool that you had sent over. And we'll see if you can figure out where some of these folks are from.
Pill, peel, fail, fell, fool, full, marry, marry. Caught, caught, since, sense, dawn, dawn.
So not to put you on the spot, Karen, but any sense of where she's from?
Well, she's trying not to have the back vowel merger. And so there's a kind of a strip both in the northern part of the U.S. and in some parts of the south where it's not merged. So
that was our newsroom's Alexandra Olgan, who's from Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay, there you go.
All right, let's listen to one more here.
Pill, peel, fail, fell, fool, full, marry, marry, caught, caught, since, sense, dawn, dawn.
Okay, interesting. She has that merger, but she sounds like she has a merger in front of nasals also, that since, sense. I don't know. I'm not going to make a guess.
Okay, fair enough. That was our web editor, Tracy Greer, who's actually from Las Cruces, New Mexico, so not that far from Arizona.
Yeah.
Do you ever take those online tests to sort of determine where you're from based on how you say certain things?
No, I don't. You know, it's very funny because we often don't notice what we do with our own speech. It's very hard to distinguish some of these things, and we don't necessarily notice them.
ASU linguistics professor Karen Adams.
Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll take to the field to toss the addle-addle, and we'll have a Did You Know as we visit the Orpheum Theater. Welcome to KJZZ's $5 Friday, a just one-day event to gather together a vital community of monthly givers. When you woke up this morning, you probably didn't have donating to your NPR news station on your list of things to do. Please consider, though, making an affordable gift to KJZZ right now of just $5 a month, either at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
Listeners provide KJZZ with its largest and most important source of income. Your monthly contribution of $5 will have an immediate impact on providing the news coverage and entertainment programs you enjoy here. Please make your sustaining tax-deductible donation right now at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
As we mentioned just a moment ago, we'll go to the Orpheum Theater with Nadine Arroyo Rodriguez for her regular Did You Know feature. I'm almost a Phoenix native. We have other Phoenix natives we've
talked
to.
You're basically a Phoenix native.
Basically, but not entirely. And Nadine comes up with these ideas that a lot of folks who are natives or almost natives have never heard about. That's unique reporting you're only hearing on KJZZ. So it's worth supporting with just $5 a month at kjzz.org.
Yeah, think about all the major stories that have been going on in our community over the last several months. The slide fire in Oak Creek Canyon, Laurel Morales was covering that day after day. The VA scandal here in Phoenix, which has been going on for quite a while. The midterm elections coming up, several competitive races, including races for all the statewide offices that you'll be hearing about here on KJZZ. In-depth, not just soundbites. You go beyond the headlines here and get some of the context about what's going on. So please put a dollar value on that listening. Maybe it's $5 a month. Maybe it's $10 a month. You pick the amount. Become a sustaining member right now during this one-day $5 Friday fund drive. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
If you've been meaning to become a sustained member of KJZZ, join us right now at $5 a month. This drive will end tonight at 6. It's just a one-day drive. That's why we're calling it a $5 Friday. Your community resource needs your support right now, and it's made possible because of your monthly sustaining gift. You can try $5 a month. If you can afford a little bit more than that, maybe 10 or 20, that's great as well. The key thing, become a part of this community resource. Keep it going strong at kjzz.org or 888-774-9150.
Thank you to James in Tempe, became a sustaining member. Jane in Scottsdale, a new sustaining member. We heard from Blake in Phoenix, a sustaining member. Just some of your fellow listeners who have stepped forward and frankly made it easy on themselves by not having to worry about when they've given. It set it up every single month at whatever amount works for you. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150. If you're on the KJZZ mobile app, you can give from there as well. KJZZ.org. Thanks.
KJZZ is supported by Mayo Clinic, where teams of experts work together to focus on you. Learn which health plans include Mayo Clinic, or you can request an appointment at mayoclinic.org/Arizona.
Google is, of course, renowned as a global giant of the internet, but now we hear the company has plans to take its hardware into space. Reports say Google wants to put its own fleet of satellites into orbit. As the BBC's Russell Padmore explains, the project is aimed at expanding access to the net.
Rumors are rife in Silicon Valley about Google's billion-dollar war chest to fund an ambitious plan to launch a network of 180 satellites into orbit to give more of the planet better access to the internet. It's reported the technology giant is employing aerospace satellite engineers to develop an extension of its project, which uses high-altitude balloons carrying internet signals across New Zealand. It's thought only a third of the world's population is connected to the internet, so Google has a vast new market to exploit. For decades, the business of launching satellites belonged to NASA or Russia, but private companies are now building rockets to carry satellites into orbit. Keith Cowing, the editor of NASA Watch, isn't surprised by Google's interest in space.
Communication satellites are, in a very simplistic fashion, just cell phone towers that are very, very high in the sky. It's not at all surprising, given that Google and other large companies have sought to have free Wi-Fi in certain areas. They've looked into, at one point, having giant balloons powered by the sun, drones. So the notion that they're interested in space is completely logical and expected, and it sort of makes sense.
It might sound like science fiction, but Google's recent acquisition of Titan Aerospace prompted much talk about the development of solar-powered drones that could stay airborne for 5 years, offering broadband from the sky. Satellites beaming the internet from orbit is just a step further.
That's the BBC's Russell Padmore. Let's suspend our sense of disbelief for a moment. You're walking through downtown Tempe, and a wild animal of the kind you've only seen stuffed in a natural history museum like a saber-toothed tiger leaps out from behind the ATM. So what do? If it's handy, grab an atl-atl.
The atl-atl essentially is a stick with a hook on it. Okay, there's a hook on one end. There's an area that you grasp as a handle on the other end. What the stick does, it gives you a longer arm.
Bob Sizemore is president of SALT, the study of ancient life ways and technologies, and an atl-atl aficionado. I met him at the Pueblo Grande Museum in Phoenix, which is hosting World Atl-Atl Day on Saturday morning.
So when you swing a stick, the longer the stick is, the higher the velocity at the end of it. It's the fly swatter, baseball bat, tennis racket concept, that the longer it is, the faster it's going to be out at the other end where it makes contact with what you want to propel. And typically an atl-atl connects to the back end of the spear.
The atl-atl came before the bow and arrow, but the concept is similar. You're using one piece, in this case the atl-atl, to send something else, like a spear or a dart, flying toward the bullseye.
It is a system that was used all over the world before the bow and arrow was invented. And for many, many centuries it was used before archery. And there's hardly anywhere around the world that, there weren't examples of atl-atl.
Our little target there is a javelina, the one that I keep missing.
Yes.
In the history of atl-atl, was it used just for hunting? Was it used, what's the origin of why it was used?
To extend your range. The atl-atl allowed you to propel a projectile with more speed and distance than you could by hand.
Charlie Todano is also passionate about the atl-atl. He acted as my instructor. We connected the spear to the atl-atl, and then...
Okay, now what we need to do is to get into like a quarterback stance, okay? All right, your feet are spread properly apart. Great, okay, with your left hand, since your right hand is deep, go ahead and point towards the target. Bring your right hand back a little bit. You want to keep that shaft as horizontal and pointed toward the target. Very good. Okay, your cock locked and ready to go. Go ahead and just do that follow through, okay? That heavy swing. Very good.
It really wasn't, but I did learn a lot. To see an expert in the making, though, watch our producer Sarah Ventry online at kjzz.org.
There are only two of its kind in Arizona, one in Flagstaff, the other in downtown Phoenix. As KJZZ's Nadine Arroyo-Rodriguez reports, the entertainment venue was initially created as part of a national entertainment circuit in the 1920s.
The Orpheum Theater in Phoenix is one of more than 15 Orpheums across the U.S. Did you know this was among the last major construction projects in Phoenix before the Great Depression?
The Orpheum was originally built in 1929.
Cynthia Weaver is with the Phoenix Convention Center and Venues, the agency that manages the theater.
And at the time, it was constructed with all of the latest amenities of the day and the era back in the 1920s.
It cost $75,000 to build the Spanish Baroque-style three-story venue. It can accommodate more than 1,300 people. Inside the theater are paintings and murals that depict the Spanish outdoors with balcony windows and vines, all to give the impression one is watching the performance in a garden. And even back then, performances could be watched in this air-conditioned space. Well, sort of.
There was a pretty large water pool underneath the theater, and they had large fans blowing cool air over the chilled water, and it would come up through the floor grates.
The Orpheum Theater was originally a vaudeville house. Weaver says well-known performers like Mae West and Abbott and Costello played here. It was also where silent films and talkies were shown.
Over the years, it changed ownership and became movie theaters, the Paramount, the Palace West. And then in 1977, the Corona family, who owns Corona Ranch, leased the venue so that they could show Spanish language movies.
In 1984, the city of Phoenix purchased the Orpheum Theater. It underwent a $14 million restoration. The Orpheum reopened in 1997, and the theater was brought back to its original form. The red velvet-covered seats, lower-level fireplace, and walls and flooring were restored. Even the Wurlitzer pipe organ used during the silent film era was refurbished.
We still show silent films at times. Phantom of the Opera runs here periodically, and that is a part of the original talkies.
There are gold medallions over the stage proscenium arch. Two of those medallions depict a dancing flapper with a ribbon wrapped around her. A similar medallion hangs over the mantle at Tovey Castle in East Phoenix. Weaver says castle owner Alessio Carraro allowed the artisans working at the Orpheum to use his machine shop to create the ornaments. In appreciation, the artisans recreated the dancing flapper medallion for Carraro's place. It's the show. I'm Nadine Arroyo Rodriguez.
We always like to know what you know. If you've got good ideas for things that everybody ought to know, send us a note. The show at kjzz.org.
On Friday, June 20th, that's 2 weeks from today, we'll bring in our resident quizmaster, Leszek Pawlowicz, for a new segment called The Quiz Show. Leszek is a Jeopardy ace who has won a tournament of champions. He'll face off against one of us in a game of trivia, but you can get in on the action too.
All you gotta do is solve this word puzzle. Take a one-syllable word and add one letter to it to make a three-syllable word that's also the name of a desert plant. And here's a hint, the plant also makes a very popular type of liquor.
When you have the answer, email us at the show at kjzz.org. We'll randomly draw one name from the correct answers, and Leszek will play on your behalf. If he wins, you'll win a special KJZZ item.
Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody along with Steve Goldstein. This is the one-day KJZZ $5 Friday Fund Drive. Your gift of $5 a month makes a tangible impact on keeping the in-depth news and information you rely on coming your way each and every day. If you've never contributed before to KJZZ, or if you've given periodically over the years, now is the time to make an affordable, sustaining gift of $5 a month. You can do that at kjzz.org or when you call 888-774-9150.
Your gift of $5 a month is vital to the financial future of KJZZ as it provides the station with a steady, reliable source of income. Please do your part and donate now either at kjzz.org or call 888-774-9150.
This is a one-day drive. This is both the first and last day of the drive. It'll be over tonight at 6. It's a Friday afternoon. You're probably getting ready to head out, maybe start your weekend a little bit early. Don't forget to do your part, though, for your public radio station. It's not the kind of thing you can do over the weekend. You can't wait till Monday on this. It's a one-day drive. It doesn't get much shorter than this. Make your sustaining gift right now, kjzz.org, 888-774-9150.
Think of all you get from public radio. Gets you up in the morning with Morning Edition, catching up on the news you missed while you were asleep, taking you through the middle of the day with the Diane Rehm Show, the BBC, also The Show. And then the afternoon, you catch up on the news you missed during the day with All Things Considered, the only place in the Valley for you to catch up on what's happened locally across the country and around the world. That's worth your support of $5 a month on this $5 Friday. Call 888-774-9150.
Thank you to Sandra in Guadalupe. Says she's been listening to KJZZ all her life and became today a new sustaining member. That's the point. If you've been listening, it doesn't matter for how long you've been listening. It could be 30 years. It could be 10 minutes. If you believe in public radio, if you get value from KJZZ, it's time to become a sustaining member. $5 a month. Maybe you can do $10 a month. You pick the amount. The important thing is to get in, be counted, and stand up and say, yeah, this is important to me. I'm going to do this. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Certainly, at some point over the last couple of weeks, you said to someone, oh, I can't believe what I heard on KJZZ. Can you believe this happened? Or this reporting was so amazing. Or I was so affected by this story or this commentary or essay that I heard. If that's ever happened to you, whether the last couple of weeks or the last year, that's worth $5 a month, that sustaining gift to KJZZ, to keep that steady source of income coming and keeping the great stories and the reporting you've come to count on coming as well. KJZZ.org, or you can call, like Paul in Scottsdale, 888-774-9150.
Your contribution makes a gigantic difference at KJZZ. It keeps batteries in our recorders. It keeps us having microphone cables. It keeps the lights on. It keeps paper in the printer. It keeps the air conditioning on. It keeps Morning Edition and All Things Considered coming your way every single day. It keeps KJZZ reporters in the field interviewing people in our community to bring you the stories of what's going on here in our neighborhoods. Your contribution, your generosity makes it all possible. We're asking you to take just a couple of minutes. Go to kjzz.org during this short one-day membership drive. You can also call 888-774-9150.
Whether it's the latest on wildfires in Arizona, you heard in-depth reporting on the slide fire in northern Arizona, whether it's the latest from the VA in Phoenix, or whether it's just things like learning how to throw an addle-addle, the show is your source for that, and it's also your source for local reporting, as all of KJZZ is. You care about this community, you're a big part of it, and this is a community resource looking for your support now on this one-day drive, $5 Friday. Go to kjzz.org.
It'll really just take a couple of minutes at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150. You want to know what's going on in your community. You want to know what's going on in your neighborhood. There's so much going on in the Valley. We bring it to you every single day through Morning Edition, the middle of the day, All Things Considered, the show on Friday, Here and Now on Wednesdays with Steve. So much going on here. Your contributions make it all possible. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
And if you love music like what we're hearing in the background,
and who
now's
doesn't?
The time. 888-774-9150. Speaking of music, Mark did an interesting piece recently with Young MC,
yes,
who is famous for...
I think this actually applies here. Don't just stand there. Make a gift to KJZZ. With apologies to Young MC, don't just stand there. Make a gift to KJZZ. For Steve Goldstein, I'm Mark Brody. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks for your support.